Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
And we're back. Welcome to episode 234 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penrod, your host. So happy you're joining me today for another fantastic episode. Twice a week, we bring you the best and brightest Magic the Gathering players in the world, those who make top 8 of a Grand Prix and those who make top 16 of a Pro Tour. And we talk about their journey, their history, what they've learned, their ups and downs, and how we can be more like them so we can achieve our Magic dreams as well. So before we dive into today's great episode, I want to say thank you so much to the patrons of the show. They are the ones that make it all possible. So thank you. Thank you if you are a patron of the show, because you will be able to hire out the show notes and the editing and do those things in the back end that really have to be done to make a podcast possible, and it's because of you that we can do those. So thank you. And of course, each and every month I always do a patron exclusive giveaway, and that prize support is provided by Paragon City Games, the other sponsor of the show. So thank you so much, Paragon City Games. I encourage all you prodigies out there to check out what they have going on at ParagonCityGames.com. Over the weekend we had the Japanese Nationals, so congratulations to those who participated, and the Japanese team is locked in for the World Magic Cup. So that's pretty cool that the teams are starting to form. And we're going to have, of course, the World Magic Cup at the end of the year. I believe in December it is. And the teams are starting to come together. So that was pretty fun to watch that unfold. Well, that's really it for the top of the interview stuff. We don't really have a lot of announcements to make, other than if you haven't picked up your MTG Pro Tutor t-shirts yet, you can do so at mtgprotutor.com/t-shirt. Pretty straightforward URL there. So check those out if that's something that interests you. So without further ado, let's bring in our great guest, sit down and talk about magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a graduate student and competitive Magic player in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He mostly plays Limited, but also dabbles in Standard and Commander as well. He recently made top 8 for the first time at a Grand Prix by piloting White-Blue Monument to 7th place at GP Denver. Coming to us from Minneapolis, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Gregory Michael. Gregory, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's good to be on the show.
We are so happy to have you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
I am ready and excited.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Greg, you can do so on Twitter. He's at @magic_MichaelP, and that's Michael without an A, so just look him up there.
Yep. And there is no A, and the P is silent.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. I love it. And then we also snuck him into the Prodigy Facebook group. So if you're on Facebook and you are a member of the group, you can tag him in a post and say hello. If you're on Twitter, you can reach out and say, thanks for being on the show, ask a question, what have you, but those are the two best ways to get a hold of him. So Greg, before we dive into the magic stuff, we mentioned that you are a graduate student. Is that what you are currently doing right now in Minneapolis?
Yeah, it is. I am a graduate student at the University of Minnesota. I study theoretical mathematics.
Mm.
So that's what I do. I could talk about that for quite a while, but my guess is that's not what people are listening to hear about.
What got you into that?
Just, I don't know. I've kind of been a math kid all my life. Mm. I really enjoyed math throughout school and college, kind of starting on the more theoretical stuff is really cool. I really enjoy teaching math. And at first I thought I wanted to be a high school teacher, but then I kind of started working as a teaching assistant through my grad program and teaching calculus to undergrads, which I really, really enjoy. And so kind of that's where I'm headed, to the academic side of it, if they'll have me.
So are you like born and raised in the Minneapolis area?
No, I'm actually born and raised in Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
I moved out here to Minnesota for undergrad, and then I stayed in the area. But I love it here. Minneapolis is a really great city.
Cool. Very cool. So where did your gaming bug come from? Did you grow up playing games with your family, or how did that make its way into your life?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely played a lot of games as a kid. I kind of grew up playing Pokemon cards and Yu-Gi-Oh cards and Magic cards with my brothers and my friends. My parents aren't really big gamers at all. My family's really into the game Scrabble. Mm-hmm. So we play a lot of Scrabble when I'm home. But that's not kind of the gaming that you are thinking
of. No, games in general. You know, people come in from all kinds of games, video games and stuff like that. So are you one of the two-letter word masters? Because I certainly am not.
We play Scrabble pretty casually, so I you know, I know a few of them, but I'm not at the like competitive Scrabble level. We just kind of play to have fun.
Oh, that's fun.
But yeah, I don't know. I dabble in other board games and definitely like them, but Magic is definitely my number one game.
Excellent. So we would love to hear your origin story. We would love for you to take us back in time and tell us the story. We want to be right there with you of the time that you first saw or played with Magic cards.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there. I've been playing Magic a long time. I think my first ever booster pack was Portal.
Wow.
For those who don't know, it was a set that was made for new players. And I was at the shopping mall with my mom and my two older brothers, and they'd been playing Magic. And they were like, "Mom, you should get Greg a pack of Portal so we can learn how to play." I have no idea what was in the pack. But I remember getting this pack and like not really being that into it. And then some of my friends at school started picking it up. I kind of have this distinct memory. I went to like an after school program after school, and this was elementary school. I was probably in like second or third grade. And I remember me and my best friend at the time, whose name was Ben, would like sit in the back during story time and like stealthily play Magic and like not listen to the story.
That's awesome.
I remember the card Whiptail Worm was the most busted card in our minds. It's a vanilla 8/5.
Okay.
but man, when you're starting to play Magic, that's super cool.
Yeah, that is. That's cool. So you loved Portal so much that you end up getting a bunch of Portals 3 Kingdom, and you're sitting on a playset of Imperial Recruiters.
Unfortunately, that is not true. No. Was that even sold in the United States? Wasn't that like a...
I don't remember. Imperial Recruiter is 3 Kingdoms, right? I don't remember, but that's like the super expensive Red Tutor. But anyways, I digress. Carry
on. None of my Portal cards are worth anything. But yeah, so I did that, and then I kind of played with friends and my brothers throughout elementary school. Middle school, I met my friend Steve in middle school, who kind of took me to my first pre-release, which was the Champions of Kamigawa pre-release, which was a blast. And then we would go to pre-releases and FNMs a lot. We played a ton of Magic in middle school. Then I kind of died off on Magic throughout middle and high school. I would still go to every pre-release and maybe play one or two drafts for each set, but that was about it. And then right around when the first Commander products became a thing, me and both my brothers picked up Commander. And they had totally stopped playing Magic, but I had kind of kept up a little bit and got these Commander products. And like, very luckily, I was playing these with my friend, and he was not having that much fun. And he was like, "No, I don't think I want to do this." And my brother walks downstairs and he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Oh, come play Magic with us," which he hadn't played in years. And then he picks it up and decides that he loves it. And, you know, weeks later, we're brewing our own Commander decks.
Nice.
And, you know, years later, we play Commander every time we have a family get together.
That's great. So who are your Commanders now?
I have a ton. I guess my favorite Commander right now is Karametra, God of the Harvest.
Oh, good.
The green white god from the
She like cheats in lands and stuff.
Yeah, she gets you a lot of lands when you play creatures. You know, as you might know from me playing Monument, I really like kind of creature based value decks.
Okay.
And she's a really good example of that.
Nice.
But I have a bunch of other Commander decks too.
Neat. See, that first Commander product, is that where like, what was it, like Tenet the Harvester and those guys?
Talia of the Vast.
Okay.
Animar, Soul of Elements.
Mm-hmm.
Those were,
I think,
the ones we played with.
Imperador
Ghost Chieftain. Yeah.
Cool.
Some very powerful Commander cards.
Love it, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, but nowadays I don't really play as much Commander. I really only play it with my brothers when I see them. And now I'm kind of on the competitive train.
Yeah.
And PPTQs and traveling to GPs and things like that.
Doing that whole bit. That's cool. So you came in Portal. Love that story. What's been your favorite set?
Yeah. Huh. So I actually think I have a somewhat controversial answer to this question. I think my favorite set might be Battle for Zendikar.
Cool.
I know a lot of people don't like that set, and I'll admit that I think it's not the best designed set. But I have some really good memories with it. I actually went to two limited Grand Prix during the BFZ time when it was just BFZ. They were two of my first GPs, and I actually cashed both of them.
Nice.
So I had some really good experience with BFZ Limited. Also, I won my first ever PPTQ playing BFZ Limited. That caused me to get into Standard, and I've played Gideon Ally of Zendikar in almost every Standard tournament I've ever played in.
Perfect.
So that's one of my favorite cards too, and that originated from Battle for Zendikar.
So what are you going to do in a month?
Well, I don't know. Blue White Monument didn't have any Gideons in it, but I will certainly miss Gideon. I've hit people for five a lot of times. Love made that. A lot of 2/2 and emblems.
That's
so
great. That's great.
I'll miss you, Gideon.
So along the same lines, what is one of your favorite cards?
Oketra's Monument is definitely up there. It did qualify me for my first ever Pro Tour.
All right.
Which is quite exciting.
So for those of us who don't know, what is that? Or if you want to go with that one, what is it? What does it do?
No, I think that's actually not the card I want to go
okay,
with.
Okay, okay.
But I will probably talk about it. I think my favorite card right now might be the card Munda Ambush Leader.
Oh, boy. Yeah, okay. So, oh, I know that one. Yeah, I know that one. Okay, yeah. So tell us what it is, what does it do, and why do you like it?
Yeah, actually also from Battle for Zendikar.
Mm-hmm.
But it costs 2 and a red and a white. It's a 3/4 haste, and it has Rally, which means whenever you play it or an ally, you get an effect. And the effect is that you look at the top 4 cards of your library, and you pick an ally from among them, and you keep it on the top of your library. So it helps you find more and more allies, so that you're just drawing allies every turn. And the reason this is my favorite card has nothing to do with what the card does. Me and my Magic friends, it's kind of become a meme card in our friend group. It's like a joke.
Yeah.
And once there was like a big pile of bulk, and someone was like, are there any rares in it? And I was like, I think there's one Munda. And we're like, well, like, are we going to find the Munda? And we were like going through this bulk for a while, and eventually someone found the Munda. And it became this joke that you would hide Mundas, and it was like a prank. If I would like hide a Munda in your deck, and you would discover it, and you'd be like, oh, I got Munded.
That's so funny.
And so, like, for example, one of my friends, I was out of town for a week, and they got my roommate to let them into my house, and they undid my bed, and they put 30 Mundas in my bed sheets.
Wow.
And put my sheets back on. And so, I don't know, we have, like, silly things like that with Munda.
That is so funny. It's so funny when like stuff like that happens. Like you totally took me back when I lived in New York for a couple years, and a flatmate of mine, he and I did like something very similar. Only we did it with handball. So in New York, they play handball on the street or whatever. And so we started I don't even know how we started. Like I think he was trying to give it to me as one of those I'm going to give it back to him. He's going to give it back to me things. So we just started hiding it everywhere and stuff like that. Like one time he had a box of Cheez-Its, and I asked if I could have one of his packs of Cheez-Its. Like the small ones, and I open it from the bottom. I eat all the Cheez-Its. I put the ball inside and like taped it shut, and then put the bag back inside.
Wow.
So he goes and he like opens it up, and like he opens it from the top, and inside is like this blue handball. He's like, wah! He was like, his mind was blown.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it's like little pranks like that. So I can totally see you and your friends having fun doing stuff like that. It's so fun.
By the way, if you're in Minneapolis and for some reason you need to buy a copy of the card Munda Ambush Leader, almost every store around here is sold out of them.
That is hilarious.
Because of a friend group. So sorry about that.
That's funny. So I guess as long as you guys don't take it too far and sneak it into one of your competitive decks and at a GP, you draw a Munda and you're like, uh-oh.
I did once ask at a PPTQ, I knew the judge. And so I asked the judge if I could do it to my friend and like, have it be okay because she knew in advance. And she was like, no way.
No way. Good for the judge. But that's at least you asked. So that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that is so fun. So there you go. So we got a little bit about you and how you came in, your favorite set and favorite card. That's awesome. So as you started becoming more competitive, with Magic, what was an early struggle, an early challenge that you faced, and how did you overcome it?
I actually think kind of in order to talk about my kind of the lows of my Magic career, I think I want to talk about the highs of my Magic career first, because I think it kind of informs the early struggles. So my first ever competitive tournament was a Grand Prix in Washington, D.C., when I was still living there. And one of my friends from undergrad kind of convinced me to go play Limited. Me and this friend, as I mentioned, I played pre-releases pretty much all throughout my life. And we would go to pre-releases together. He was a very serious player. I was pretty casual. And we would go to pre-releases. And the store we went to actually had a cut to top 8 in pre-releases. And he and I would both almost always make the cut to top 8 in the pre-releases. He was a very competitive player, so that makes sense. But I was just kind of this nobody. And so he kind of identified me as a good player. And he was like, hey, Greg, there's going to be a Limited GP in your hometown. You should go. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I'm not very good. I don't play Magic very seriously. I can't play at the GP level. And he was like, no, like seriously, you're better than you think you are. You should go. And so I went to this GP. This was GPDC in 2014. 2015, I want to say, it was Theros Limited. And I opened Elspeth Sun's Champion, which was the most busted card in the set.
Not bad.
And a really good pool. And I 7-2'd, so I day 2'd my first ever GP.
Nice.
And I actually finished in top 100, and back then that was good enough to cash.
Cool.
So I cashed my first ever GP, and that was really sweet. Shortly after that, I started playing on the PPTQ circuit, and I was doing okay. And then about a year later, I started going to some other GPs. There was a GP in Dallas, which is where my brother lives. And so I went to go visit him and play in this GP in Dallas. This was Magic Origins Limited, my second ever GP. And I came in 22nd place at that
What? GP. Wow. Ever GP.
A few weeks later, I went to Madison, which is pretty close to Minneapolis, to play in my third ever GP. And I came in 20th at GP Madison, at my third ever GP.
All right.
So, and not to be bragging here, but I ran really hot at the start of my career.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, I went to GP Atlanta, also BFC Limited. I started 9-0, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then my day two didn't go great, and I ended up in 46th place.
Okay.
So here I was. I'd been to four GPs in my life, and I had cashed all four.
Yeah, top 100 each time. That's pretty good.
Which is absurd. And obviously, you can't keep this up. And so you asked about lows in my Magic career. This was definitely my high in my Magic career. Was when I kind of had these four amazing finishes to start off my career. But then, obviously, this isn't sustainable. And after that, I started going to more GPs. I started flying to them because I was doing so well. And it was kind of a long time before I ever cashed a GP again. Hmm. And I think the low, kind of the biggest struggle in my Magic career was kind of recovering from this really explosive start, where I kind of came out of the gate running and had a lot of really strong finishes and was like, wow, I'm so amazing at this game. Or really, I just kind of got kind of lucky and ran hot in my first few GPs. And I'm sure I played well. But after that, going to some GPs and not day twoing or having bad day twos was really hard. And kind of recovering from that and saying, okay, even though I'm not going to do amazing at every tournament I go to, I'm gonna keep playing. So I don't know. It's kind of a weird low to have, but definitely at the beginning of this calendar year, I was kind of in a bad place with Magic. I was like not winning at PPDQs anymore, and like not even day twoing some most Grand Prix that I went to, and I was, you know, I wasn't feeling it, and even worse, it was stressing me out.
Hmm.
I felt like every weekend I had to go to a PPDQ because I wanted to get back on the train and get back close to the Pro Tour, and it was stressing me out a lot. Actually, literally like 3 months ago, I sat down with a bunch of friends and I said, you know what, like Magic is stressing me out right now. I'm trying too hard to qualify.
Yep.
This used to be something I did for fun. And now it's kind of become this added bit of pressure. And I sat down and I said, you know what? I no longer care about making it to the Pro Tour. And I was serious. And I legitimately didn't care about it. And here we are 3 months later, and I've qualified for my first Pro Tour.
Very interesting. I would be surprised to learn. Well, let me put it this way. I would not be surprised to learn that there's a correlation there, because others have said something similar where when they let go of the pressure, like of the results, and kind of not that they don't care, but they just go to, you know, have a good time and do their best and just to, you know, just to play, that they see, you know, better results and
yeah,
they, you know, they end up on the show, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I literally 5 days after I sat down with friends to have that talk, I went to GP Omaha, which was earlier this summer. I played Mardu Vehicles with Max McVitie, who's been on your podcast before.
Yeah, great guy.
He's a friend of a friend. He gave me his deck. And so I played it, and I had my first ever win-in for the Pro Tour. I had a win-in to top 8, which I lost.
Hmm.
And all my friends were like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, you lost your first win-in. Are you going to be all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine.
Cool.
I had a really fun tournament. I had a blast playing Mardu Vehicles. And I still had an amazing finish. And so yeah, I like really think that what you say about like remembering that magic is a hobby and we're here to have fun is an important thing to remember.
Ah, so cool. So along your journey, who have you looked up to? Who have some of your magic mentors been?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I mentioned, this friend who I went to pre-releases with and encouraged me to go to my first ever GP, his name is Andrew Ellenbogen. He's actually also been on your show.
Yes, he has. That's cool.
Yeah, he's a really good friend of mine, and I refer to him as my magic mentor. He really likes when I do this. And actually, I was listening in preparation for this interview. I went back and listened to his podcast, his time.
Yeah,
on
yeah,
his podcast.
Episode, yeah.
And yeah, and he talks about kind of finding players who are, you know, maybe not as serious, but are winning their local events. And I kind of listened back to this and I was like, oh, wait a second. I was one of these players that he recognized as good and kind of convinced to start playing Magic.
And here you are. That's so cool.
Headed to the Pro Tour.
Oh, man.
So yeah, he's been a huge help, especially as I start playing Constructed and Standard and stuff like that. He's been really helpful. He's taught me just so much and like really encouraged me to keep playing. And you know, he's always at GPs with me and we always talk about how things go. And I've learned a lot talking to him.
That's awesome.
Also, Matthias Hunt is a local Magic player who's really good. He's one of the Star City Games commentators, but he's also a very good player. And just every time I sit down to play with him, I feel like I learn a lot. So he's another person who I would consider a mentor.
Love it. And for those interested in going back in the archives and checking out Andrew's episode, it's episode 108. So that's be pretty cool. And Greg, you're going to be episode 234, just FYI.
234.
So, 234, yep, 234. And he's episode 108. So that is so cool. That is really fun. You're going back and listening and recognizing, hey, he's talking about me, and then here you are. And that's so fun. So there you go. So there's some Magic Mentors. Because we know that, you know, you can't do Magic alone, obviously, because, you know, you have to play against an opponent, so there's always that person there. But then in the preparation, like, it really does benefit people to have others around them who they can rely on and ask. And that's just so cool to hear, yeah. You know, who has influenced the guests on their way up.
Yeah. And on that note, I have a great network of friends in the area. My two closest Magic friends are named Matt Sikic Johnson and Sam Eilenfeldt. And they actually, Matt qualified 2 weeks before I did for the Pro Tour, and Sam qualified 1 week before I did for the Pro Tour. And so within 3 weeks, our little team all qualified.
Woot.
For the Pro Tour.
That's so awesome. Cool.
We call ourselves Team Face after the song "I Can't Feel My Face When I'm With You." It was playing on repeat on our first road trip to a GP.
Oh.
And it kind of became our team name.
That's great. Man, see, doing Magic with friends, what's better than that, you know? That's great.
Yeah. That was the other thing about my low when I was getting really stressed. I started taking it so seriously trying to get to the Pro Tour that I would go to Magic tournaments without friends. Hmm. And they're just so much less fun when you go back.
Yeah, so lonely. Yeah, I totally hear you. Yeah.
I think that made kind of the stress a lot worse.
So we love diving into, you know, our guest's worst Magic moment, but not for the sake of just dwelling in it, but to really draw out what you learned from it. So you really shared, you know, some of your comeback and whatnot, but what were you able to like take out of, you know, that worst time that where you were kind of going through the stressful moment?
Yeah, I mean, I am never going to be a professional Magic player. I'm going to the Pro Tour, but I'm always going to be a grad student or a mathematician or a teacher. Magic is a hobby for me. Magic is something I do to have fun. And reminding myself of that, I think, was the most important part in saying, I need to be having fun every time I go to play Magic. And the reason I went to Denver was because I loved playing this blue-white monument deck, and I thought it was pretty well-positioned in the metagame, and it was one of the more fun standard decks I'd ever played. And so I was like, great, I can't wait to go to Denver, not because I want to win it, but because I'm going to have a blast there, and I have friends who are going. And so really just reminding yourself that Magic is your hobby. Magic is where you go to escape your daily stresses. That is kind of the number one takeaway I think I got from my low point. Actually, one of the things that got me on this competitive track was grad school can be stressful. You know, there's constantly research going on. There's a lot of stuff to do kind of in every moment. There's kind of never a dull moment in my grad school career. And especially in my first year, playing Magic was the only time in my life where I would step away and not think about grad school at all. Like, you know, no one's asking me, oh, how's your, you know, program going? Oh, do you have any tests coming up? You know, it's just a time where I'm completely not thinking about the stresses in my work and school life. And instead, I'm just very focused on this game.
That's great. Yeah, I love that. Remembering that it's an escape from the stresses of the other stresses of your life, and not turning it into another stress of your life. Yeah. Because then you just don't have any escape, you know?
I don't want to get too much into politics, but another example of this was right after the last election. I was not thrilled with the results of the election, and I was kind of in a very negative space. And I called up all my Magic friends and I said, okay, I want to go play Magic the next few days because I'm not at all going to think about the political landscape. Instead, I'm going to have this nice escape. And that was a really healthy choice.
Yeah. Again, it's an outlet, you know, that you can get away from the other stresses of life. That's awesome. So the flip side is our highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Well, interestingly, so I just top aided a GP. It's definitely one of my proudest moments, but I don't think it's the GP performance that I'm most proud of, which is kind of weird to say. Like there are some GPs where I've played multiple platinum pros and beaten a few of them and kind of come really close to top eight, but not actually made it. And those were GPs that I walked away from and was like, wow, like I played so well. I know I didn't make top eight. I definitely played really well at Denver. And I'm very proud of my top eight performance. But like, for example, GP Omaha, I played multiple platinum pros and I was one win away from top eight. And I think that was one, I walked away from that kind of more proud of my performance, just cause I had to play so many good players. Also GP Atlanta, I mentioned this a while ago. This was in BFZ Limited. When I had my 9-0 start, I was in the feature match area in my 8-0 match, and I was a backup match. We actually never got shown. But just being in the feature match area and starting the day 9-0 with the best record you possibly could, I was in like second or third place going into day two. That was another one of my most proud moments as a competitive Magic player.
Yeah, that's really neat. You know, recognizing that, you know, you can go toe-to-toe with the big names and hold your own, you know, and drawing on that strength. I think that's great that you identified, you know, those as your, you know, as your proudest moments, being able to recognize, hey, I didn't make it to the, you know, top eight of GP Omaha, but I played really well. I played against some big names. I held my own, did well. And that's really neat that that you pulled that out. That's really cool. So yeah. Looking on GP Denver, let's dive into how you prepared for that event, because we would really love to get an insight as to what it took to, you know, make the top eight. So first, I want to preface this with the mindset, right? Like we already talked about several months ago, you got yourself in a place where it's like, you know what? I'm playing Magic for fun. I will still go to competitive events, but it's because, you know, they're a good time. I'm going to enjoy my time with friends. I'm going to play decks that I like. And so the mindset, I think, you know, is key. In addition to that though, how did you choose your deck? How far in advance did you start practicing? What did that period look like leading up to GP Denver?
This is a kind of funny story because, so I hadn't been playing standard much after Omaha, and one of my friends sent me a text, my friend Brian, and pretty much said, I think you would love this blue-white monument deck. And I went and I watched some matches online and I was like, oh my God, you're right. This deck is perfectly up my alley. And that weekend there was a Star City IQ local here in Minneapolis, and he was going, he was playing blue-red control, and he was like, you should come with me. And I was like, great. And so I had most of the cards. I threw the deck together and I went to this IQ. The IQ was the same day as the Pro Tour, where White Blue Monument had a really poor showing.
Okay.
And so I show up at this IQ and I see a bunch of friends and they're like, oh, like we haven't seen you playing standard in a while. What are you playing? I'm like, oh, I'm playing Blue White Monument. And they're all like, Greg, that deck's really bad. It's never showing at the Pro Tour. Yeah. It's weak. And I was like, dang, like I didn't really realize that.
Yeah.
And I lose my first match of the IQ and I barely win my second match. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God,
they're right. Oh my gosh.
This deck is trash. I should never play it again. And then the tournament went on. I got an unintentional draw and then won a couple matches. And I was like, hey, like I'm winning with this deck. And you know what? I'm having a really good time doing it. Good. And all my friends are saying, oh, it's a fluke. Deck's bad. But I'm having fun. And GP Minneapolis was on the horizon. And so I said, you know what? I agree with you. Maybe this deck's not great, but if I win this IQ, I'm going to lock in this deck for Minneapolis. And I did. I won the IQ, Blue White Monument, nice. The Qualified Star City Invitational. And so I played it at Minneapolis, and people were still telling me my deck's bad. And I said, you know what? If I 10-5 or better at GP Minneapolis, I'm going to take it to Denver, and I'm going to play it again at Denver. And I finished 10-5 at GP Minneapolis, exactly. And so I was now committed to Denver and playing the deck again. And I went, and then I made it to the top 8. That's kind of how I settled on my deck. It was just the deck that was fun to me, and then I put up some good results and kept playing it. How I prepared, I don't know. I just tested a lot with my friends who were also playing in these GPs. I tested the red matchup a lot. I tested zombies a lot. Just kind of the most important matchups. I don't really enjoy playing Magic Online that much, so I did a lot of testing in person. Because of that, I probably test less than the average grinder, because Magic Online is admittedly the most convenient way to test.
Of course.
So I was maybe a little underprepared, but I felt like I'd played a lot of matches and I understood the most important matches, and I felt like I had a really good sideboard plan for most of the big decks. So,
and how did you come about that sideboard plan? What did that process look like? So you just said you play a lot with friends. Was it just through that process of constant
testing
gaining
matchups, testing post-board matchups, experimenting with cards, especially against mono red? Like, once we were just like, what if we tried Linvala against mono red? I know it's a 6-drop, but maybe it's great. And we tried it out, and we played a bunch of sideboard games. And every game where we drew Linvala, it just wasn't close, and we won easily. And so we're like, hey, like, you know, we just randomly tried this card, but it was great. And so trying out things like that and seeing how they work and adjusting your sideboard plan accordingly, I think, is very important.
How did you even get to that point? So I wanted to ask, hey, like, what are some, the things that you feel really set you apart, or some of the key things that you picked up on, or changes that you made, or whatever. And you just haven't mentioned Linvala right there. So how did you even come up with that idea?
I was sifting through a pile of cards, and I saw the card Linvala, and I said, hey, this might be really good in the mono red matchup. Yeah. We should try it. So honestly,
that's great.
Kind of
so
stumbled upon it.
And that's really good. So you obviously were you're still in the cards, you know, looking at cards that are, you know, standard legal and just obviously in the context of the current deck that you're playing. So you have this deck that you like, you know that it resonates well with you, you enjoy playing it. So that's one, you know, key thing. You went to several events and practicing with friends. So you're constantly playing this deck against different matchups. So you're becoming familiar with it and with the matchups. So that's another key thing. And then you're staying involved in the cards that are still, you know, relevant for the format. And you're just, again, you know, like you said, through, and you see this one and you're like, okay, let's test it, and, you know, and then you weren't afraid to give it a shot. Instead of, oh, it's a 6-drop against red, it's too slow, no, you give it a shot because it's testing, right? If it doesn't work, no harm, no foul, you find another card. So that's really cool how you go through that process.
One thing that you mentioned that I want to stress is I don't know if I think Blue White Monument was the best choice for Denver. You know, if someone came up to me and asked what deck should they play, I don't know if I necessarily would have advised them on Blue White Monument. But it was the deck that I had played the most. It was the deck that I had a ton of experience with. It was a play style I knew. And I think that is really valuable. Sometimes playing the best deck is a good idea, but if there's a play style and a deck that you know really well, it might be right just to play that, because you're going to gain more points by playing the deck correctly than you would by playing a stronger deck.
So true. Yep, so true. So on the note of, you know, learning and growing and playing, as you have played Magic in, you know, a variety of settings against hundreds of people, what's the biggest mistake that you have observed other players make?
I think one thing that I would tell new players to do is to listen more. I think people are very opinionated about Magic, and I think people kind of have this need to prove themselves and to convince people that they're good. And a lot of times I'll see new players kind of take opinions on and kind of champion them, and, you know, see this weird card in Limited and be like, you know, I'm gonna tell everyone that this card is great, and because I won with it once, and you know, I'm gonna become the champion of this card, and I'm gonna prove to everyone that I'm good by talking about this card. And I think I see a lot of people kind of try too hard to prove themselves as a good player, when really what they should be doing is listening to what other people have to say and kind of learning from the good players around them. I actually think there's kind of this whole like good player thing, I think is kind of toxic in the Magic community. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, you know, so-and-so is a good player or so-and-so is not a very good player. You can beat them. I don't actually think we gain much from like kind of insulting someone's play style or even praising someone's play style. We're all here to play the game. I've had some matches where I sit down against an opponent and someone will tell me, oh, that person's not very good. You can beat them. And you don't get anything from that, because if you win, then you're like, oh, obviously I won. I'm better than that player. And if you lose, then you feel really bad because you're like, I just lost to someone who I'm better than. That shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So I don't really, and I don't know. I guess I don't really like, you know, we're all here to have fun and play this game. You know, we don't need to go around calling people bad players. So I don't know. I think a lot of it is the need to prove yourself and convince people that you're a good player. I think that that's ridiculous. And you should instead try to improve yourself as a player and listen to what people have to say.
And so how do we go about doing that? How do we avoid that trap of saying a player is good or not good?
Just listen. Listen to what people have to say. And if things sound right, then follow their advice. You don't have to follow every piece of advice you hear, but kind of engage in Magic, in conversation, in theory conversation about Magic, not by trying to prove yourself, but actually by trying to learn and improve yourself. Improve yourself instead of prove yourself. That's kind of key.
Love it. I like that. I think that's really cool. I like that. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Okay, I guess there are two things I've learned from Magic as I've gotten better. One of them is that if you set your mind to something and you work at it a lot and you find people to do it with and you have fun when you do it, you can have success. And really, having fun and being with people does correlate to success, at least in my experience, and I think a lot of other people's experience. The second thing maybe I've learned from Magic is just kind of this kind of tactical idea of like optimizing things that you do. I think it translates pretty well into other games, for example, and I don't know, sometimes into life in general, and just kind of taking this kind of strategic approach that is very useful in Magic. I think the strategic approach can help in other aspects of life.
Yeah. I love that methodical approach to problems and situations and, you know, finding answers and whatnot. Again, obviously it's very, you know, applicable in Magic and we do it all the time, but then taking that to other areas of life where we're faced with a situation and we go through, you know, the optimal, you know, outcome and how we can get that based on our actions. And I love it. I just absolutely love the connection between Magic and life and how, you know, sometimes when we take a step back and take a look, we go, oh, wow, look at all these correlations. And, you know, we're really truly building life skills, you know, as we apply ourselves in Magic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Thank you. Cool. You said that better than
So what growth have you seen in yourself as a player? How have you grown the most?
I think that playing a lot of different Magic formats has improved my like Magic instincts a lot. I think I'm a pretty good player just because I don't know. I think if I follow my instincts, I'm pretty good at making the right play. And, you know, through my life, as I mentioned, I've played in almost every pre-release I can think of, back to the first one I went to, which was Kamigawa. That's like so many different limited formats. I've played Commander, which is wildly different. I've played Standard, a little bit of Modern. I used to go to Casual Night at my game store when I was in high school, and they kind of had some wacky Magic formats. Like they would play this like draft format that was basically like Conspiracy. It was like a multiplayer draft thing, and this was before Conspiracy even existed. And so I guess I think that like playing a lot of different formats that are all very different games, but exist within the same rule system. I think like just having experience to this rules system in so many different ways has really improved my Magic instincts, and stuff like that can come up a lot of times.
Yeah.
For example, with Blue White Monument, sometimes what happens is you're playing against zombies and you get into an Ormondal mirror, which means you both have Ormondal in play, which is a 9/7 flying indestructible lifelink.
Yeah.
And when you both have Ormondal in play, you can't attack. Like, no one can attack. And knowing how to maintain board states like that, where, like, card advantage is key and removing your opponent's most important threats is key, it really felt like a commander game. And there were a few matchups that I had in competitive events that I think my experience playing commander really helped me know how to navigate those board states and correctly use my resources and win those games.
That's pretty neat. That crossover, that insight that you gained. That's really cool. So along the same lines, as a Magic player, what are your shortcomings? What have you identified as something that you can work on?
I think my biggest shortcoming as a Magic player is my self-confidence. I think I don't think of myself as a great Magic player. And I think I probably am. I mean, I just qualified for the Pro Tour. I have a lot of good GP results. I've won a bunch of PPDUs. That's probably what you would think of as a great Magic player, at least at the local level. But I don't know. I kind of always assume that the people around me know more than I do and have better opinions. And I think that helps with my kind of listen advice that I gave earlier, is that because I kind of doubt myself a lot, I tend to listen to what other people have to say and tend to take their advice seriously, and that helps me improve. So I guess it's not a bad thing not having a ton of self-confidence about my Magic ability, but, you know, self-confidence is nice.
Yeah, I hear you. So you mentioned, you know, that you just qualified for your first Pro Tour and whatnot. What is that going? How are you going to prepare for that? What is that going to look like for you? I love talking to people about their first Pro Tour to hear how they're going to tackle that.
Yeah. So it's a long way away. It's not until February, because I qualified for the Modern Pro Tour in Spain, which is really awesome. I've played Modern twice in my life. Once at a PPTQ where I scrubbed out, and once at a GP where I also scrubbed out. So I have almost no experience with the format. So I don't know. I think my plan is to, in a few months, kind of talk to all my friends who know Modern and find a deck that fits my playstyle well and just play it a bunch and do my best to understand the matchups. I'm also, as I mentioned earlier in the story, qualified for the Star City Games Invitational, which is half Modern, and that's in December. So I have kind of two Modern tournaments on the horizon that I need to get ready for.
Dang.
Collected Company is one of my favorite Magic cards. That's pretty high on the list.
Excellent.
And I hear you can play that in Modern.
Yes.
So I'm definitely going to look at some Collected Company decks. A lot of my friends are really into Affinity right now, so I'm probably going to look into that.
Affinity.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just kidding. I play Abs. Well, I'm building an Abzan deck that has Collected Company, so I'm on board. I'm on board with that plan. I like pulling up creatures that, you know, silver bullets and have answers, and you know, I love that style. And I'm just joking about Affinity. I have a friend that I played most Modern with. There's two. One I always played like red. He did mono red for a while, but it settled on red white. And then the other one, Zach, he always did Affinity. And so I'm just razzing him more than you about playing Affinity. So yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. Also, I also mentioned earlier that my two Magic teammates both qualified for the Pro Tour just before I did. They actually qualified for Albuquerque, which is the standard one coming up.
How does that work?
I'm hoping they also qualify for Spain so we can go together. But they also kind of get to guinea pig the Pro Tour experience for me. And they can go and they can see what testing for a Pro Tour looks like. And then, you know, if they end up doing well or doing poorly, I can kind of take the lessons they learn and maybe make my testing better or different depending on how their experience goes.
So was yours the first that fed into Spain?
I actually think, yes, I'm not certain, but I think Denver was the first tournament to qualify people for Spain.
Interesting. Because you had a friend like 2 weeks before and he's going to Albuquerque. So it's like,
correct. Wow. And 1 week before was the RPTQ.
Oh, got it. Yeah, because then you say you had a friend who the week after you qualified. So are they going to Spain?
No, I was the end of the story.
Got it.
Two friends in the 2 weeks before and then me.
Got it. Okay, cool.
The week after was yesterday.
Yeah,
so I guess
that's
this
true.
Is coming from the past.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So hopefully they, you know, re-up and you'll be able to go there. Like you said, travel with friends and then they'll have a pro tour experience under their belt by that point. So that'll be really beneficial for everybody. So
yeah.
Cool. Super cool. So let's see, how many pro points do you have then?
5. I think I got 1 from my 10-5 finish in Minneapolis, 4 from my top 8 in Denver. So I have 5.
So,
with 3 more for going to the pro tour, that would put me at 8.
Okay.
So I'm very close to becoming a bronze pro, which would be nice.
And what does that get you? So what's the point limit for bronze? And what does that get you?
10 for the year, and it automatically qualifies you for RPT keys.
Oh, really?
I don't play PPT keys anymore, which is nice because as I've been playing and traveling to more GPs, that's kind of taking up my Magic time. You know, I don't want to spend every single weekend in my life playing Magic. And since I'm going to GPs, I've kind of gone to a lot fewer PPTQs.
Mm-hmm.
Like last season, I think I only played in 4, including the last dance, which I guess is a lot. But I came in 2nd in 2 of them and 3rd in 1 of them. And like that's kind of like, oh man, like I didn't qualify for regionals and I might have played more PPTQs, but I was off GPing.
Yeah.
So, and you know, doing other non-Magic things with my life.
Yeah, well, that's pretty cool that they have that bronze level now, you know, because that's just great. That's really, really neat. I was going to ask, you know, what are your plans with these 5 points? We're really early on in the season, and so so you're gunning for bronze at least, but who knows, right? So
yeah, I'm also on a bit of a Magic break. Mm-hmm. I could have gone to GPDC. Obviously, that's where my family lives. But I don't know. I'm going to ride this high for a little bit, kind of take a break from Magic, wait until Ixalan comes out, and then kind of jump back into it. So.
Nice. Man, yeah, a lot of changes, you know. So when Ixalan comes out, obviously we're losing like 4 sets in Standard, gaining 1. They're changing the Planeswalker rule. There's a whole bunch of cool pirates and dinosaurs and all kinds of fun stuff. Like I'm super pumped. I think it's going to be a good set.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good set. See the Gatewatch do Gatewatch stuff again.
Well, I don't know. There, who knows? Like, I don't know. Like, Jace is supposed to be on Ixalan, but he just got Jace's defeated. So maybe he's like lost his mind or something.
Yeah, it's kind of wandering. That's true. They all did. That was kind of nice, I would say. As far as lore goes, it was nice to see them get knocked down a peg.
Yeah, I guess by the time people listen to them, they'll know a lot more about.
About the story and stuff like that. So that's true because they had that Jace card. They released the 3-mana Jace.
We just saw it yesterday to give an idea of when this was recorded.
Yeah, so good stuff. Yeah, and there's the dinosaur commander. You see that one?
Yeah, I did.
Looks pretty dope.
I think me and my brothers try really hard to make commander decks that are like non-obvious.
Okay.
I think we try really hard to innovate and make kind of weirder commander decks and like less popular commanders.
Got it. So you don't want somebody to see your commander and be like, oh, dinosaur tribal.
No,
got it.
I more meant that like when I look at that dinosaur, I know exactly what to put in the deck just by looking at the card.
Oh, God.
And that's not my favorite. I kind of like commanders that make me work a little bit more and kind of work harder to make an interesting deck around them.
Yeah.
And kind of lower powered commanders, trying to like abuse them and find ways to make the like lower powered commanders powerful.
Oh, got it. So like low power commanders like Narset, for example, you like that one? No? Oh, okay.
In fact, the exact opposite.
Are they adding the legendary super type to Planeswalkers and therefore they can be commanders now?
I have no idea.
Okay, I thought I heard that they were.
That they can be commanders.
Because obviously like they have those few that they did a couple years ago for the commander set.
Yeah, you can't have legendary artifacts or legendary enchantments as your commander, so I don't know why you would be able to have legendary planeswalkers. They're also not creatures.
Yeah, but they changed the planeswalker rules, and so I didn't know if they were.
I don't know. The commander's rules committee will have to make a decision.
There we go. Well, good stuff, man. This has been super fun. Hey, where do you keep, how do you keep up to date with Magic stuff? Do you have any Magic related resources that you can point us to?
I don't think I have anything super insightful. I use MTG Goldfish a lot. That's where I get all my deck lists from. That's a really good website. I don't know. I keep up on Reddit. But that's mostly it. I mean, I'll browse Star City Games and Card Kingdom, and things like that. So
cool.
One other story that I wanted to mention.
Please.
It sounds like we're closing off. Something that I've learned about GPs really recently. So my first ever GP, the one in DC, I lost two matches in a row and realized that I hadn't eaten anything or drank anything all day. And I was incredibly dehydrated. And so I made it a goal at GPs to every round fill my water bottle.
Yes.
And drink a lot of water at GPs. This led to kind of a funny problem, which is that I have to go to the bathroom
all the time. Yep.
Because I stay super hydrated.
Yep.
And one thing that I started doing that I wanted to make people aware of is at a competitive tournament, you can call a judge and you can ask to go up and use the bathroom at any time, especially if it's between games. That's kind of a good time to do it.
Okay.
And at both Denver and Omaha, I started this thing where before every single game three, I would call a judge and ask to go to the bathroom. Whether or not I had to go to the bathroom, I would call a judge and just step away from the table and like have this nice little walk where I would walk to the other side of the convention hall, get a sip of water, walk into the bathroom, kind of leave and walk back. And I think another thing that kind of led to my improvement was this stepping away from the match,
yeah,
and taking a breath and having a nice little walk and coming back. The judge will give you a time extension, so yeah, don't worry about it. But that's just kind of a physical thing about GPs that
I've really that's a cool hack. What does that do for you mentally? What have you noticed?
Just, it just calms me down. And especially GP matches tend to be pretty high pressure.
Yeah.
And so I think just being able to step away and take a breath and come back and say, okay, it's time for game three. Let's do this. I think that improves my magic game. It also like, I don't know what it's like from the other side, but I also wonder what it does to my opponents mentally to have to just sit there for like 3 minutes, just shuffling their deck, waiting for me to come back.
Yeah.
I wonder if it has a mental effect on them too.
Love it. Dude, that is a sweet hack. Thank you so much for chiming in and sharing that. I want to remind everybody real quick, if you want to connect with Greg, you can do so on Twitter at @magic_MichaelP with a, yep, with no A. And,
there is no A. Yeah, the P is silent.
And the P is silent. Love it. We also snuck him into the Facebook group, like I mentioned at the top of the show. So, you can join us there and carry on the conversation if you so desire. So, Greg, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
I've said it three times, but make sure you are having fun while you play Magic. It is a game. It is your hobby. And if you're not having fun while playing Magic, you should go find something else to do with your time. It's a fun game with fun people, and make sure you're always having fun.
Well, Greg, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for your time, for sharing your experiences, your stories. You're a good storyteller, and it's fun to dive into what's been going on. And you are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be made of screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Sean. This was great.
Gregory, thank you so much for joining us today. Episode 234 is in the books. And as always, Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/GregoryMichael. And that's Michael without the A. So just look them up there. There'll be links to any resources that were mentioned. And of course, a synopsis of what we talked about. So thank you so much again, Gregory, for joining us. And Prodigies, thank you for listening. I would not do this without you, because me talking into a mic with no one listening would obviously be very boring. So thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I really do appreciate your love and support. And a special thank you, a special shout out goes to the patrons who make it all possible. mtgprotutor.com/Patreon is where you can go to learn more about that. Basically, you can choose to pledge any amount you want per episode and then set a monthly limit so you never go out of budget. And as a thank you, each and every month, I do a patron exclusive giveaway, which always ends up being some sweet magic swag and is always provided by Paragon City Games. So thank you to the patrons and thank you to Paragon City Games. Please check them out at ParagonCityGames.com so you can learn more about what they are doing for the Magic community. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again for joining me. I hope you have a fantastic week lined up full of fun, exciting Magic endeavors. And until next time, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.